It's 8:12. Joining me now in the studio, Charlie Sturgis with our Mountain Trails Report. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So great riding out there already.
Oh, my goodness. It's and then with that little bit of rain last night, things should be spectacular over the weekend. I think it's our brown version of powder skiing, right? So let me just start with a couple of things. First off, we had a really successful membership month, so I just want to thank the community out there for participating. And, you know, obviously everyone cares so much about our trails around here. It's just really gratifying all the time. And we had a super successful Mountain Madness night over at the Doubletree Yarrow. Can't thank their management enough, and Epic Promise. And also we did that in conjunction with Park City Transportation and Park City Municipal in total. So super successful event, really great turnout, totally appreciate it. We have National Trails Day coming up tomorrow. So a couple of quick details. We're meeting at 8 o'clock at the Rail Trail parking lot, Rail Trail parking lot trailhead, just about 100 yards east of White Pine, right? So some of us refer to it as Henry's Lot over there. But and we'll be working on the new trail we're building that sort of, if you've noticed, is paralleling the Lost Prospector Trail to some degree. And actually, it's going to be a really exciting trail. We have a great project. We have plenty of work to do. And if you like, show up with certainly long pants and gloves is really always important. A water bottle helps. If you have a good shovel or something, an extra tool, because we do run out of tools sometimes, is great.
So this trail is going to go where to where?
You're looking, it's going off the Erie Drive, just over here in our view corridor, Leslie, and it's going to go all the way over towards, it'll drop down before Chatham, across the crossing area, and it'll give you an easier access into the Lost Prospector area than maybe Skid Row. It'll give you a small kind of in-town loop, and also allow you to not necessarily have to drop down on the Deer Valley Drive. And that's also for the residents as well. The residents were definitely having some trouble with that. But you're a lot of people that are getting to the end of Lost Prospector and then dropping right onto, on the Deer Valley Drive, which is not the safest place probably to jump into. So this will give you a chance to turn around and head back towards the White Pine area and drop down onto the rail trail. So pretty exciting. It's going to be cool.
So we've got lots open, but are we still looking at Mid-Mountain as the snow line?
I think it's fair to say that Mid-Mountain's not good to go. You know, you do hear and probably see some Facebook posts on people getting away with some drier riding. Also, certainly, there's some differences of opinion what dry is. But I think it's, you know, Mid-Mountain typically is not really truly good to go until June 15th. And we're getting close, and you look around and look what the areas that are over the trails, like on Iron Mountain itself, it's clearing off in a big way, but there's still water running, and it takes a little bit to get it out of there. So be patient. There's a lot of great riding. Everyone who's been down to Heber and riding on Coyote and Riverview has been saying it's unbelievable. Round Valley's unbelievable. Still cool enough to be down in Corner Canyon, Dutch Hollow. So, and today I believe if all goes well, I'm just going to run out to High Star and check out what they're doing, what they did last summer and fall. It should be really good. So, and also people keep asking new map. We're about, you know, we try to be June 15th. We'll probably make that date for sure. We'll have it in the stores by June 15th.
Okay. And then also just the heads up about Rob's becoming a directional trail.
What do you think? I think it's really cool. We're going to see, I think, some other things announced out of UOP probably as well that kind of match up to that. You know, when UOP built the trail from Ambush over to the UOP area, that was always one of the possibilities it would allow for us to make Rob's directional. Rob sees so much downhill traffic during the summer now, and it's a neighborhood hiking area that the wear and tear also on the trail is substantial, and the line of sight is difficult, especially with the shadows. So what you, to be perfectly clear, the first 3/4 of a mile, so up to the intersection, will be remain two-way for bikes. That way Ambush isn't, or not Ambush, but Rosebud isn't just like cut off. And then after that, it'll be uphill only for bikes, which I'm excited about. And you'll be able to go over to the UOP via the new trail. And if you're parked at the Rob's Trailhead, you'll actually be able to spin onto the trail and spit right back out on the top of Sun Peak Drive and ride right back to your car.
Okay. And so when is this going to change on Spiro, making that directional?
Spiro needs some real work. You know, we put out a little bit of a plan to maybe see how Spiro maybe can be brought all over the base of PCMR. It's a fair amount of work to actually make that happen, and it does go along quite a way. So what we are going to do over in the Spiro area this year, you'll see a short trail right where we have a lot of signage that discourages people from going uphill, and that's going to be able to get the hikers over to the Dawn's Trail and hike up Dawn's, which if you haven't done it that way, hiking up what we used to refer to as the Armstrong Downhill and going down Armstrong with bikes coming at you is way easier way to hike that.
Okay. Charlie, anything else?
No. Leslie, right. Thanks. Have a great weekend.
You too. Okay. KPCW News Talk. Good morning. Well, according to the National Highway Safety Administration, 71% of Americans are unaware of the so-called move-over law in their states. The numbers apparently aren't much better here in Utah, with more people on the road during the busy summer months. A media event was held earlier this week to put the word out about Utah's move over law. On the phone, I have Utah Highway Patrol spokesman Todd Royce. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So what is the move over law? What does it entail?
So this law has been around for over 10 years. And what it entails is if you're on an interstate with more than one lane, that it requires you to move over a lane when you're approaching emergency vehicles that are stopped on the side of the road. So law enforcement, emergency personnel, you got paramedics, EMTs, and then also tow truck drivers. And it just gives us one extra lane to be safe, and you never know what's happening up there, and just kind of expect the unexpected.
So were you surprised to find out that a lot of Utahns don't know what it is?
Well, with the 22 years I've spent out on the roadways, they're getting better. But, yeah, there's still quite a few people that don't know this law.
So what is the reality of people abiding by the law? I mean, what are you seeing out there?
We're starting to see, I mean, back in the day when I first started on, I mean, it was kind of a thing to see how close you could get to law enforcement on the side of the road. But now you'll start to see people starting to turn their signals on before they're getting to those emergency personnel that's on the side of the road, and then they'll gradually move over, either that or they'll come right past it and we'll end up stopping them. And a lot of people did not know that. So what I would always do is I would always let people know, especially right at first, is I would give them a warning, but I would tell them when they get to work to tell 15 of their friends that they just got pulled over for this, so that people can understand that. It's for the safety of our troopers and deputies and officers out there on the road and emergency personnel to move over.
Yeah, how bad of a problem is it?
Well, within the last 3 years, just 3 years alone, we've had 43 troopers hit. Either their cars hit or they're hit or both. So it's a big problem for us. And in law enforcement, a national statistic is, and here in the state, shows that more officers are killed in car crashes and being hit than they are from gunfire. It's a big problem for us, and we just want to get the word out and remind people that they need to slow down and move over. If they can't, if somebody's next to them in the lane next to them, they just need to reduce their speed and get as far over in the lane as they can to give us as much room as possible.
All right. So, again, I mean, if you're busy with something, how is it that you're going to track somebody down who doesn't do that?
So there's a lot of times when we will be finishing up a traffic stop, and we'll just look behind us and we'll wait for the next one to come by and not move over. Or sometimes we'll be on a traffic scene, traffic crash, or we'll be doing some enforcement, and another officer will pull in front of that other officer that stopped and actually wait for that violation pull you over and issue you a citation. We stop quite a few people every year for failure to move over.
Okay. It is a moving violation. You're going to have to pay a fine, as well as, I guess, deal with your insurance company.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Anything else, Todd, you think people should know?
Just be careful, and this is a good rule, not only for emergency personnel, but for everybody. If somebody's off the side of the road changing the tire, I always put it this way. If it's your spouse or significant other, they're changing the tire, would you want somebody to move over and give them extra room? Absolutely. It's just a polite thing to do.
Okay. Todd, appreciate your time this morning.
You bet. Have a good day.
Utah Highway Patrol Officer Todd Royce. KPCW Attorney Margaret Olson has been selected by the Summit County Council to be the new county attorney. She'll be serving out the unexpired term of Robert Hilder, who passed away earlier this year. She joins me now on the phone. Good morning, Margaret.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hey, I know you've got a meeting to get to, so we'll try and keep it quick. So give us your background and tell us why you wanted the job.
I have been a lawyer for the past 25 years. I started out as a prosecutor for the Salt Lake County District Attorney's Office, and for the past 17 years have had my own firm with Lincoln Hobbs. And when the opening was posted and I reviewed the qualifications for the job, I realized that this was my opportunity for civic engagement.
So why do you think you're a good fit for the job?
Well, uniquely among lawyers, I have both civil and criminal experience. I have worked in the criminal justice system my entire career, both for the state, in working for the criminally accused, and also as an advocate for victims. I'm also a 23-year resident of Summit County, and I have a deep love and ties to our community.
So what happens to your private business then?
Well, by statute, before I take office, I have to find substitution counsel for each of my pending criminal matters. And that's what's keeping me busy in these days prior to my swearing in. And with the civil matters, I will have a little bit more time to wind those matters down, get them settled, get them handed off to other lawyers in my firm, or perhaps for some of them to refer them out.
So do you have to give up your partnership in the firm or?
Well, my relationship with the firm will be something called of counsel. So I will be allowed to retain my relationship with my firm and my partner, but will focus my full-time work on the Summit County attorney position and working for the taxpayers of Summit County.
Yeah, because I'm guessing it's going to be a pay cut for you as well, huh?
Well, my husband is very supportive of this endeavor. We're a two-income family, and he had, prior to the 2016 election, actually been encouraging me to jump into politics and public service. And so when opportunity presented itself, he was fully supportive of me making this move.
So, of course, you now have to think about running a campaign to get elected in your own right. The last one was pretty testy. Are you up for this?
I am. I have been an active Democrat my entire adult life, and I have a lot of support from the state Democratic Committee and from other elected officials who are active Democrats and currently holding public office. I'm already forming my campaign committee.
Okay. Because that election would happen, what, in 2018?
Correct.
All right. And then in terms of what you'll be focusing on, would you more on the civil or criminal side?
Well, obviously, I've got a lot of learning and listening to do. And the county attorney's office actually has 4 units. There's a victim advocacy unit, there's the Children's Justice Center, there's the civil division and the criminal division. And so it is my plan to take the next 60 days, listen to the employees of the office who are doing great work, and to figure out what the needs and operations are and to figure out how I may be best placed. I will say that I commit and intend to attend each of the county council meetings. I think that's very important for keeping a finger on what's going on in our county.
Okay, Margaret, anything else you wanted to say to our listeners?
No, Leslie, I thank you for giving me an opportunity to introduce myself officially.
Okay, well, congratulations on the appointment. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's Summit County Attorney Margaret Olson. Ski team athletes who make parks. Lauren Ross and Tommy Ford are just two of the dozens of U.S. ski team athletes who make Park City their summer homes as they do off snow training at the Center of Excellence. Both of them recovering some injuries and joining me now in the studio. Good morning to both of you, and thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's start with you, Lauren. You're from Bend, Oregon. You've been skiing on the World Cup circuit, for about 7 years now, I guess.
Yep.
You're a downhill and Super G?
Yes.
Yeah.
I race mainly the speed events, downhill, Super G, and Super Combined.
Yeah. You're basically just on Lindsey Vonn's tails here, huh? I mean, in terms of the team competitiveness.
Yep. Always trying to keep up with Lindsey. So it's really nice to have her around and have that pace.
Yeah. So you suffered an injury in March. What happened to you?
I fell in the giant slalom at U.S. National Championships, and I injured my right knee, tore my ACL, my meniscus, and did some more damage in there. So I had that repaired 9 weeks ago today. So I'm on the mend and doing plenty of rehab and working out here using the facilities in Park City. And, yeah, just trying to get everything back together before the season commences.
Yeah, when do you get back on snow?
I'm hoping to be skiing in November.
Okay. And, of course, then starting to train because it's an Olympic year. What's the likelihood of you competing next February?
I have no idea right now. It's just too early for me to tell. So, I mean, the chances of me skiing in November are, I don't really know. Maybe it's 50%. I'm not sure, but I'm just going to work as hard as I can and hope for the best, and we'll see what happens.
Now, Tommy, you're also from Bend. So did you guys grow up skiing together?
Yeah, we both grew up skiing at Mount Bachelor since we were about 7 or 8, for the race program. And, yeah, that's home.
Yeah. And then you also suffered an injury a pretty significant one back in 2013, breaking your femur. How the heck did that happen?
So broke the femur back in France. I was out free skiing with a friend after the Adelboden World Cup, and we were just doing a little trip in France, and it was an area we didn't know too well and went too fast and found some trees.
Oh, so is the leg hit a tree? Is that?
That all happened pretty quick, so I don't remember exactly what did the break, but I was going fast, so it could have been a rock or a tree in this situation.
Okay, and then you mostly focus on the speed events as well?
I focus on giant slalom.
Okay.
I've done Super G in the past and a little bit of slalom here and there, but these last couple of years is giant slalom.
Okay. So in terms of your recovery, you've recovered from that because you've been skiing since, but you've also got some hand injury or something.
Yeah, I just got some plates removed from my hand. I had an old thumb injury. Skiing, you catch your thumbs. It's pretty easy to do, as most people know.
Yeah.
So even more on the mend, less metal in my body.
Okay, good. But in terms of since the 2013, nothing too significant then, huh?
Pretty minor, yeah.
Pretty healthy.
Exactly.
All right. So you'll be ready, no doubt about it, to compete in the Olympics.
Yeah.
So when do you guys get back on snow?
We will have a camp in August in New Zealand. I may ski in Oregon at Mount Hood in July here and there, help out with some camps, some regional camps or Mount Bachelor Ski Club camp. But our team will be training in August for 3 weeks in New Zealand. And then some of the guys go down to Chile and we go back to Europe in October. And the first race begins World Cup at Solden.
Solden.
Yep.
Yeah. And in terms of the COE, I mean, it's a pretty nice facility. How many of you actually kind of show up to use that during the summer?
Yeah,
any idea?
There's like 10 of our team. There's a whole group of freestyle, alpine, Nordic. And right now, our tech teams, most of us is here. There's like 4 of us here right now. But then there's like 10 Europa Cup development team guys that are moving up to World Cup. A couple speed guys, and then on the women's side.
Yeah, there are quite a few athletes here. And that's kind of what what's nice about coming to Park City and working out at the COE is we get to interact with other athletes from other sports. So it's kind of nice to see new faces and or see some old faces, you know, work out with our conditioning coaches. Right now, it's just myself and Raisie Stiegler that are here from the World Cup team. But next week, a lot of the girls come back and we'll have a full crew here. But every day we go in the gym, there are quite a few people in there working out. So it's good to see everybody working hard.
Yeah. So is it just you guys go in and do your own workouts, or do you have somebody there kind of cracking the whip and putting some focus on the workout?
Yeah, we have trainers that we work mm-hmm. with. So my trainer, Eirik Hull, he pushes us a lot, and he's in there with us every day. He works full time in the gym, and he does every workout with us. So we've always got a lot of guidance.
Yeah, I mean, Josh Applegate, my trainer, who I've known for years, he actually reminded us to come in this morning. He heard on the program. He's like, yeah, yeah, he's going to be on the air. So shout out to him.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Yoshi.
And one of the things that the COE has that I think is pretty cool is that pool where you, I mean, it's like kind of a force of water and you're kind of building up against resistance. Are you been doing that?
Yeah, way? I've actually been swimming outdoors a lot lately just because the weather's nice and it's good for me to get outside. I do spend a lot of time in the gym doing physical therapy. I'm doing 2 hours of rehab at least every day. So it gets a little bit monotonous being inside. So I like to get outside to swim, but we do have that really nice pool that has an automatic current in it. So you can just swim forever in one place if you choose to do so. But I prefer to actually move through the water a bit outside.
Not to mention a cold.
Yeah, really, the hot, really cold. Hot, cold tubs are actually, I've been utilizing those a lot pretty much every day. Just moving back and forth, a minute in the hot, a minute in the cold. And our cold tub right now is at like 50 degrees. So it's really, really cold.
Yeah. So now have you had a chance to be on the courses in South Korea?
I have not. The speed men and women have been there. We went over to Japan, did a World Cup last season, 2 seasons ago. But it sounds like the speed courses are fun. They got some nice technical terrain. Tommy, one of the guys who builds the course and maintains the snow, made it fun. Like, Lauren can talk about it more.
Yeah, we had a Women's World Cup there this year to test out the Olympic track and in early March, and it went really well. The venue is definitely very unique. It's different from anywhere else that we ski in a lot of ways. It's not really, you know, there aren't extreme mountain peaks like you see in the Alps in Switzerland or in France or even in Lake Louise or around the States. But it's a unique spot, and they did a very excellent job of preparing the snow and preparing the hill and getting everything set up and ready in time. And the course is really fun. There's a lot of good terrain in there and some good speed. So yeah, I think everybody's looking forward to going back and racing this season.
Yeah, and I'm guessing there might be a test event then this upcoming season then for you, or no?
No, we're going in cold. We'll get there a couple like weeks early and probably see the hill. We can't be on the hill, but we'll be skiing around it. And yeah, it's usually you just go and look at it and go.
Yeah,
get a feeling for the snow.
Yeah, it helps be in the spot. The climate.
And then you'll probably do some early season training, I'm guessing, like at Copper, yeah?
Yeah, in November we're in Copper and Vail and training for 2 weeks there, getting prepared for Beaver Creek. And our normal World Cup season goes on. It starts October and goes through March, and the Olympics is in the middle of that. And, yeah.
Okay, well, good luck to you, both of you, and good luck on the rehab there, Lauren. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you for having us.
8:48 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the Local News Hour on KPCW. In the studio with me now from Park City Film Series, Executive Director Katie Wang. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's start first with just the fact that we've got two more weekends.
Yep.
This weekend, Norman,
yep.
And we've got the Friday Film Review promoting
Yes, yep. And Norman is a great film, I thought. I saw it at the Telluride Film Festival, starring Richard Gere, in a most unexpected way. He plays a New York fixer, and I think he's a character that, as he said in the Q&A after the film, that all of us can relate to. There's always that guy that kind of knows the guy that kind of wants to wheel and deal and do stuff for you. But he's not, you know, the person who has the ultimate power, right? You're never quite sure if he's going to come through with what he says he's going to do. So that's the character that's Norman. And so he befriends this Israeli minister and buys him a very expensive pair of shoes that kind of starts this chain of events where he ends up actually kind of realizing his dream of becoming the guy who has power and then not really knowing what to do with that. That it's really not as sometimes dreams are. It's not what you think you want is not actually, once you get it, what you really want to kind of be. And so it has these somewhat tragic but very comedic results as a result of all of the sequence of events. But I thought it was a great film. And we'll have that this weekend, Friday, Saturday at 8 and Sunday at 6.
Okay. And then ending it with next weekend's documentary.
Yes. So Thursday night, we'll have a documentary called Tickling Giants. It's the last in our Real Community series. And this is a fascinating/depressing film, I think, to watch because it, you know, it becomes more and more relevant, I think, to current events here in the United States. It's about Bassem Youssef, who's an Egyptian heart surgeon, actually, and decides that he's going to become a full-time satirist. So he's known as the John Stewart of Egypt. And he has 30 million people that tune in every day to see his show. And so as compared to Jon Stewart, who had 3 million, right? And you think about the popularity of Jon Stewart. But what it, you know, it's really a story about is using satire to push back against oppressive regimes and speak truth to power. And it's, you know, it's amazing how humor can really diffuse the situation and also empower people. That if you can laugh at something that you might find frightening, it kind of gives you the ability to push back on it and say, well, maybe that's not the way things should be. Maybe this is not the government that speaks for me. And certainly that's what happened in Egypt. And, you know, there's some pretty serious consequences for his actions there under the, you know, the various regimes that he was operating under at the time. And certainly he started with Mubarak and then Mohamed Morsi and now Sisi. And so he's actually in exile here in the United States now as a result of his work. But so we'll have the ACLU of Utah there. Their legislative director will talk about their work in the state of Utah and certainly across the country to protect our right to freedom of speech here in this country and to talk about freedom of press, because that's certainly an issue that's come up a lot under the current administration about what the press should and should not be able to say, according to the president. And certainly as a reporter, I think you can relate to that, you know, if we don't have you know, this third kind of form, you know, voice, the press, to show us what's actually going on as the citizens of the country, how do we actually know what's happening, you know? So we need someone to report the news and to push back and to question and say, is that really, you know, you're pulling out of the climate accords, you know, what does that mean? You know, and to hear the various sides of that argument, and that's really what the press is so valuable for.
So the director of the film, Sarah, what is it, Taxler?
Mm-hmm.
She unfortunately wasn't able to join us, though. But do you know the backstory on this? I mean, how is it that she knew about this guy?
Well, so he reached out to, Bassem Youssef actually reached out to Jon Stewart, because once he realized he wanted to start this show, he started in his laundry room, right? And he was on YouTube, and then he decided to create a show. Nothing like this had ever happened in Egypt, right? No one had a satiristic news show. And so he was like, well, you know, Jon Stewart does it really well. And, you know, he was a big fan. So he actually flew to New York and met Jon Stewart. And then Sarah got to he met Sarah at that time. She's a producer on that show. And she's a documentary filmmaker as well. And she said, you know, I'd love to do your story. But she actually did it in secret. It took about 3 years. She didn't have enough funding to bring over a whole crew. So she went by herself. She doesn't speak Arabic. So a lot of the stuff, the film is mostly, it's kind of, I would say, 80% in English. And then obviously there's some Arabic with subtitles. But she said, you know, she was shooting some sequences where she had no idea what people were saying until she got back to the cutting room and then had people translate for her and say, this is what's actually happening. She said, but, you know, it didn't matter because you could feel the passion. You could tell what was going on just by the tone and by how people were kind of reacting to the various questions. But just a really fascinating story, kind of a shoestring budget. But I think she did a great job in terms of bringing a story to light, much in the way, interestingly, that Bassem Youssef had started watching Jon Stewart and he had to learn about American politics. You know, what is a Democrat? What's a Republican? To really understand why Jon Stewart was so funny, when you watch Tickling Giants, it makes you think, certainly as an American, there are things that I didn't know about the Arab Spring that I had to learn about to really understand and appreciate what was going on, even though obviously at a meta level you could appreciate that this was not a safe thing necessarily to do.
Okay, so that's Thursday, June 8th, 7 p.m.?
7 p.m., yep, and it's a free screening. And then after the film, we'll have a discussion with the legislative director, John Mejia from ACLU of Utah.
Okay, and then wrapping it up Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night with another documentary.
Yep, so another documentary. It's called Harold and Lillian, and it's about Harold and Lillian Michelson, who were amazing, very instrumental in the history of film. Harold was a storyboard artist, and his wife, Lillian, was a film researcher. But, for people who don't know much about film, you don't realize how much storyboarding really is kind of the beginning element. I mean, you have to have like a script, right, of course, to know what people are going to say. The storyboard artist tells you what to see. So if you've seen the film The Graduate, the iconic image, of looking under the leg of Mrs. Robinson and through that to see, the seduction scene, that was Harold's vision. Right. And so he was kind of looking at kind of the smaller elements of the film, but that are so powerful. I mean, everything about a film is intentional. And so Harold worked on, The Birds, and he's worked with Francis Ford Coppola. And so you get these great stories from, the kind of these icons in the film industry about how instrumental Harold and Lillian were to the work that they did. And then also their love story, that they stayed together for 40 years. They had an autistic child at a time when autism was blamed on the mother, and how challenging that was. So it's kind of, it's a human story, but it's also a celebration of film and the art of film.
Okay. Then you're going to take a bit of a break, but then you're coming back with a series with the library about some old favorites.
Yes, well, absolutely. And we also do have Peter Pan. So our National Theater Live production on Sunday, it's Peter Pan. And this is Peter Pan like you haven't seen it before, which I love about National Theater is they're reimagining an old story. So Hook is played by a woman. Peter Pan is, and all the children are played by adults. And, there's various ethnicities represented and gender kind of changing in the roles that just gives you kind of a refreshed look at a classic story. So then we'll partner with the Park City Library throughout the summer. We'll have our Throwback Thursday series. So we have everything from Spaceballs and Bedknobs and Broomsticks to Caddyshack and I think one of your favorites, Young Frankenstein. So it'll be kind of something different, different every week. Certainly everything from, rated G to rated R at Caddyshack, but thinking of family broadly and just great, great films. They're all free Thursday nights at 7 o'clock.
Okay. So kind of like the community series continuing.
Exactly. And that'll be from June 15th is the first one all the way to August 24th. So all the way right through the summer, Jim Santee Auditorium, free popcorn, and just kind of a fun way to celebrate film and some great stories.
Yeah. And we did talk briefly last week just about you meeting with the city council or city staff about maybe expanding the film series season. I mean, would that start as soon as next year, or do you have some more work to do?
We have a couple more years left on our current lease, mm-hmm. and so we'll go into lease negotiations probably in the next year and look at, right now, we have a certain number of screenings we're allowed to do per year. And so we're looking at, we'd love to expand that a little bit more into the summer season and to see what that would look like from the city side. There's a conditional use permit on the building that disallows a commercial theater to be in there, which in my mind is kind of 7 days a week, five screenings a day. Certainly that's not something that we, have any plans to go towards that. I think really, the three nights a week during the season is really kind of the sweet spot in our community. But it would be nice to do some more screenings in the summer. That said, we're doing a drive-in movie in Prospector on August 12th. We'll do some outdoor screenings actually in the Latino community in Aspen Villas and over in Elk Meadows, some free screenings in Spanish. For us, it's kind of fun to be able to do something different in the summertime, but, it'd be also interesting to see, to do a little bit more within the Santee and kind of continue the independent film screenings we do year round, to make it a year round event.
Well, it's air conditioned now. And I think that was part of the problem.
It was
before.
Huge.
It
oh,
was
yes.
hot
oh.
and now it's not.
Now so. It's not. And so we have the ability. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Before the renovation, it was not even a consideration. It would be 90 degrees in there and just horrifying. So now to have a climate conditioned environment, and a really beautiful theater to use, that it'd be nice to be able to use it a little bit more in the summertime when it's mostly empty.
Okay. Anything else, Katie, you wanted to mention?
No, just, you know, great film this weekend, parkcityfilmseries.org. You can check out, you know, the trailers for upcoming films and, you know, the drive-in movie in Prospector Square. I think it'll be a lot of fun. It's a surf movie called Proximity. It's Taylor Steele's new film. So kind of a ski movie, but for summertime. So we'd love to have people come out for that. And we'll also have walk-up, bike-up spots as well. So if you don't want to bring your car, you can, we'll have spots for you in the front row. So, yeah, kind of a fun family thing to do in the summertime.
Okay. Well, we'll bring you back when...
Closer to time. That'd be great. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks. Katie Wang is executive director of the Park City Film Series. KPC.